V-minus 85. GCC headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. The road was long, but here we are, William Godfrey began, proudly addressing a room full of political leaders and media personnel. The day had been long, with countless formalities and photo ops with various national representatives having driven Godfrey to near exhaustion, but the main event had arrived at last. Going out live on primetime American television, the GCC's official inauguration was set to reach viewing figures unseen since Contact Day itself, when billions of awestruck citizens had rushed to the nearest TV to see aliens walk on Earth. Whatever the next few days might bring, as the full nature and implications of the messenger's recent reconnection with Dan McCarthy came to light, and particularly if it leaked to the public once shared among the GCC's full membership, Godfrey knew that the speech he was embarking on now would be quoted for years and decades to come. We are gathered here today to formally initiate the cooperative union of our manifold member states, he continued, deliberate in his matrimonial tone. We are gathered here today in the spirit of breaking down barriers and extending our outreach, not only among our once competitive nations, but also between our new collective and the extraterrestrial beings whose intervention secured our future 1 year ago today. Indeed, the GCC will serve as the focal point of contact between humanity and any other extraterrestrial races we might one day discover. This implicit point, that humanity's prior contact with one race of aliens didn't necessarily increase or decrease the likelihood of future first-time contact with another, drew nods from a small group of guests whose presence pleased Godfrey greatly. And although Timo Fiori himself had chosen not to attend, and was instead wining and dining at a Contact Day anniversary party in Colorado Springs, the presence of three senior staff from Fiori Frontieri, his privately held space research and exploration firm, was hugely symbolic. The staff in question were Alessandro Bonucci, Timo's right-hand man, along with the far more famous duo of Luisa Conte and Francisco Abate. The duo owed their immense name recognition to their official listing as the discoverers of Comet Conte-Abate, better known as Il Diavolo. Only they, Timo, and a handful of others knew that Alessandro had been the true discoverer, only too keen to leave the dubious honor of naming a potential planet killer to his more senior colleagues. Even before the dissolution of the GSC or the events of Contact Day, there had been serious concerns within several American agencies that Timo might partner with the Chinese. The money Beijing had been willing to throw at space-related research and technologies already posed a huge problem for President Slater's administration, but any link-up between CNSA and Fiori Frontiere would have been cause for immediate alarm. But now, on the contrary, Timo's decision to recognize the GCC rather than the ELF was a cause for celebration. The support of the space-obsessed world's richest man didn't only strengthen the GCC in budgetary terms, however, but also, perhaps even more importantly, it hugely strengthened the GCC's appearance of legitimacy. With Dan McCarthy and his friends and family in Birchwood diplomatically silent on the GCC-ELF chasm, and with no suggestion that they would ever change course, Timo's position mattered. And in the eyes of a public more skeptical of their political institutions than ever before, Timo was a man whose words still meant something. He was also greatly admired for his bravery in the face of the life-altering injuries he suffered in a botched assassination attempt at the hands of nihilistic terrorists who now hid themselves within the dangerously media-savvy GeoSov movement. That same terrorist attack in Colorado Springs had almost cost Emma Ford her life, and both Timo's injury and his close friendship with Dan made him a hugely sympathetic figure across the world. Dan didn't mind that Timo had opted to publicly pick a side, understanding that he had only done so under a considerable degree of political pressure. Timo would have been able to withstand this pressure had it been merely economic in nature, but the firm message Godfrey ultimately issued wasn't something he was able to ignore. Essentially, Godfrey calmly told Timo that unless he backed the GCC, its founding charter would include a provision barring any private launches into orbit or the analysis of data from certain kinds of privately held telescopes within its member states' territories. Timo's observatories in South Africa and Italy and his headquarters in Colorado Springs would have been affected by these restrictions, as would his ambitious plans for an orbital laboratory far larger than any before it. Godfrey framed it as though these were general-purpose restrictions and as though he'd had to work hard to convince some unnamed member states that Fiori Frontieri should be allowed to operate at all. All Timo had to do was issue a public statement recognizing the GCC's sole legitimacy and to refrain from ever recognizing the ELF, Godfrey said, and Fiori Frontieri could continue as normal. The only thing that made Timo Fiori more sick than the idea of shaking Godfrey's hand was the alternative option of moving his operations eastward and working with an organization led by countries who seemed determined to engage in direct geopolitical competition with his European homeland. "We are joined tonight by our friends from Fiori Frontieri," Godfrey said, gesturing to the attendant trio and inviting a polite round of applause. "And their presence is a sign of just how inclusive the GCC wants to be. Timo Fiori is not a head of state or government, and yet he has a seat at our table because of his committed investments in the field of astronomical research. We all know that two of our esteemed Italian guests detected Il Diavolo, from a facility Timo built from the ground up and funded for the good of humanity, and I'm sure you'll all agree that their presence here is more than welcome. I'm equally delighted that our membership includes so many of the nations who came together when our planet's future looked far less rosy than it does now, and despite my disappointment that we are not joined tonight by representatives from certain other countries, I do want to stress that our door is always open. Despite the hollow propaganda with which Beijing has been bombarding the world of late, the GCC is as exclusionary as the sun is purple. Allow me to set the record straight. We did not sit around a table and draw up a list of invitees to this party. This party was open to all. We did not and will not exclude anyone. Others, unfortunately, but not irreversibly, have opted to exclude themselves. And when I say our door is open to all, I do mean all. Were I to get a call from an ELF-affiliated state tomorrow, I would welcome them with open arms. But it's often said that when one door closes, another opens. And, out of necessity, that's the case here. To be granted a seat at the GCC's table and pass through our door, any such nation will first have to exit the ELFs and relinquish all participation within that undemocratic organization. Godfrey's eyes narrowed all of a sudden as he saw his executive assistant standing at the far side of the room with his arms aloft in a decidedly ominous X shape. Stopping the speech now to find out what was wrong seemed utterly out of the question, but Godfrey had known and trusted Manuel for long enough to know that this wasn't a drill. As Godfrey considered his next move, however, the ball was taken from his hands by an unexpected development. "What the hell's going on?" one cameraman asked, his voice loud and clear before a deafening hubbub filled the room as the others caught on. Gruffly calling for silence, Godfrey heard a clear shout that all phone, data, and satellite signals within the room had suddenly been lost. He stepped away from the podium, seeing little sense in continuing a speech that was meant less for the room than the billions of people around the world who could no longer see it, and headed straight for Manuel. "Don't worry about anything," he calmly announced to the more frightened members of his audience as he walked. "Please wait patiently while these signal issues are corrected. We had intelligence that the Geosolves might attempt some kind of citywide technical disruption or cyber attack today, and it looks like our pitiful foes have had a rare and momentary success in that regard. But let's not let them win by losing our composure, shall we? As you were." This effortless lie about an expected cyber attack came to Godfrey on the spot, and it seemed to do the trick. People were still unhappy and concerned, for sure, but there was no longer a sense of dread that everything had died because of a bigger issue, such as a physical attack somewhere else. "So, what's happening?" Godfrey whispered when he reached Manuel. His tone was gentle, even in the circumstances, as it tended to be whenever he spoke to one of the few men in the world he truly and unconditionally liked.
"We did this, sir," Manuel replied. "We engaged the building's full signal block as soon as the word came in."
Godfrey's shoulders tightened.
"When what word came in? Don't tell me those bloody geosols really have—"
A quick headshake from Manuel cut off this train of thought.
"Okay," Godfrey continued. "So what is the news? And how did we get it before this lot?"
he asked, gesturing to the media pack behind him, all of whom were desperately fiddling with cameras, phones, and computers in the hopes of getting some kind of data or satellite signal.
"At this stage, it's intelligence rather than news, sir. This isn't public yet, not even locally."
Godfrey had to fight to keep his cool, frustrated by Manuel's slowness in spitting out the pertinent details, but loath to let any anger show when so many eyes were on him.
"Locally? Where?"
he probed, almost hissing out the question. "What the hell is going on?"
"There's been a discovery on a Tanzanian beach," Manuel said.
"Sir, there's been an alien discovery."
After slowly and dryly blowing air from his lips, Godfrey grinned involuntarily.
"Not just on the anniversary of contact, eh?" he mused. "But literally, while I'm making my inauguration speech. It's a bit on the nose, Manuel, don't you think?"
The man couldn't hide his confusion.
"Sir, I don't—" "It's a distraction, Manuel. A cheap Chinese hoax. I mean, come on, Tanzania. With the money they've spent there, it's practically a Chinese colony by now. I'm almost embarrassed for them. The timing just makes it all so blatantly obvious. Do they really expect anyone to believe that they just happened to dig something up today of all days? Are we seriously supposed to buy the story that they just discovered whatever this thing is?"
Manuel gulped.
"Sir, if our ground intelligence is correct and this image is legitimate, this isn't something they could have kept under wraps for a single second."
He encouraged Godfrey to turn around so they were side by side and both facing the rest of the room, then showed him the image on his phone. Of its own accord, William Godfrey's jaw dropped.
"You see, sir," Manuel said, his voice shaky under the weight of the words. "They didn't just find it. It just arrived."